it will turn out that this whole calculation will be tedious and extremely complicated. You can also have a look at the original paper, but it is not much simpler. I guess it is more complicated than everything I will present today. Okay, so problem. Of 1 PI effective action as far as I know Professor Rischke will then in the next chapter take the 2 PI effective action to calculate the same thing and everything will be simpler. Okay, so we do the hard way today and next week you'll see the simpler way. Okay, so for you see that this mass, the mass depends on phi square. So for special values of phi square, it might happen that that m square becomes negative. So the mass of our particle becomes imaginary, and this is a problem. Okay. So for phi square smaller minus m square over 12 lambda, which is the same as phi 0 square over 3, we get that m square, depending on phi, is smaller than 0. And hence, m becomes imaginary. So this is a problem. So we want to illustrate it. So we have phi, we have the potential, and we have this usual Mexican hat shape. And we have phi zero and minus phi zero. So, and then there's a region where m square of phi smaller or equal to 0. For the moment, we will neglect this problem because our physical point seems to be in the good area. Okay. But unfortunately, now due to these terminal fluctuations, as I told you, if temperature is high enough and this terminal mass gets big enough, our minima will walk inside this bad region, and then we get a problem. Okay? So, symmetry restoration. And this means, this is important. This means that for t larger than 0, the minimum of 1 pi effective action becomes smaller. Okay, so in formulas, so we take the derivative of the 1 pi effective action. This is 0 at this physical point. Okay, and this physical point depends on temperature, and this is smaller than phi 0 for t larger. In principle, it is strictly larger. Ah, but in principle, because we have this, it is okay. Good. Okay. And now we want to consider an illustration of this effect. So, okay. Hopefully, I can draw it. So, first of all, we have the potential at t equal to 0. So now we have we, not you, but we. Okay? But we and you are the same for t equal to zero. Is it on the blackboard? Yeah. Okay. You see, for t equal to zero, the fluctuation part vanishes and both potentials are the same. Okay. And now we turn temperature on, but we turn temperature on in a way that t is smaller than our critical temperature. So this means that this minimum or these minima are there, but their value is smaller. Smaller Tc. And now if you turn temperature high enough, so this is T larger or equal to Tc, both minima meet right in the middle, and we have one minimum. Okay, and this is where symmetry is restored. And you see that when we plot this bad region, that our minimum walks inside this problematic region. Okay, so we obviously cannot avoid this problem, but we ignore it. Okay, and we do the calculation, and in the end, something meaningful, more or less meaningful, comes out. Okay, we want just to estimate this critical temperature. Okay, it is just an estimate, but it is a tough calculation, and I would suggest that we make the break right now and then do the calculation in one step. Okay, good. Then I would say break until 12 for 10 minutes, and then we continue. Try to estimate this critical temperature within this 1 PI effective action. So estimate Tc within 1 PI formalism. So this has been done. I give you the reference. It is Dolan and Yakif. PLD 9, 1974. Okay, so it's older work, okay? But if you know the papers of Yakif, it's technical, and you can have a look on your own if you want. So I want to summarize some calculation steps. Okay, first of all, we want to calculate this thermal contribution. Okay, the thermal contribution was 1/2 T over V trace log, and then this propagator divided by T square. And you already saw in this lecture, for the free theory, this is basically an object that is comparable to the free theory. And from the free theory, you know that this can be written as the following integral, ek over 2 plus t times log 1 minus ek over t. Okay, and this, I'll write it in this line. Ek is the usual energy, momentum square plus m square. But important point, m square depends on phi. And this is important. So we cannot do the usual procedure of shifting the energy the energy scale. And in order to renormalize this term, we have to be careful, a bit more careful. Okay? So, and this means that In general, we will see in a moment that the renormalization of this energy requires counterterms. Okay? And we want to motivate these counterterms, and to this end, we write, so I summarize, so Ek depends on phi, and renormalization requires some care. Okay, and to this end, we write Ek as follows. Ek can be written in the following integral representation, divided by 2pi log minus k0 square plus Ek square minus I delta. And we want to prove this. Okay. Proof. So maybe, yeah. Okay. Proof. The first step of the proof is to take the derivative of the integral. We calculate d by d Ek square. So we take the derivative with respect to E square. Okay. K zero divided by 2pi log minus K square plus Ek square minus I delta. So but this is nothing else. So I mean, you see the inner derivative is just a 1, okay? And then from the derivative of the log, we get 1 over the argument of the log. Dk0 2pi 1 over Ek square minus k0 square minus I delta. Okay, and now we can evaluate this integral using the residue theorem. Okay, so this guy has poles, so it's a usual pole, so the residues are quite simple to calculate, has poles at k0 equal to plus minus Ek. Maybe I write it in the following way. At Ek square minus I delta, but this is nothing else than plus minus Ek minus plus some new infinitesimal object that we call epsilon. Okay? I mean, it's just pulling the Ek out of the square root and then identify the new or the resulting part here with epsilon. Okay, it's pretty. And okay, of course you expand the square root. Okay, good. Now we make a small picture. So we have to integrate along the full real axis. So this is the K0 plane, okay? And now we have two poles. One pole is here, okay? So this is minus epsilon, and epsilon. And this is Ek and minus Ek. Okay, and we take the integration contour and close with a half circle in the upper part of the K0 plane. So it is important in the residue, using the residue theorem, we don't get a minus sign from the winding number because we integrate in the usual mathematical counterclockwise direction. And okay, we keep in mind where these poles are, and we rewrite the integrand as follows. So my usual way is to call k0 then z, okay, but I mean this is just my convention. Okay, and now I insert a minus sign, okay, because we have to keep in mind that our integration variable is here with minus k0 square, okay? So now I pull out a minus sign to write k0 square minus e square and so on and so forth. Okay, so we have a minus sign, and then the integrand can be written as z minus ek minus I epsilon times z plus ek minus I epsilon. Okay? And it's not a typo that here, that we have minus I epsilon at both. It's not a typo. You can check it. Okay. And now we use the residue theorem. The residue theorem tells us that this integral is nothing else than 2pi times the sum over all residues inside the contour, but there's only one, so the sum has only one term. And we have to take the limit, because we have a usual pole. We can write it as limit minus ek plus I epsilon minus 1 z minus ek z plus ek minus I epsilon. And then we have to multiply by the bad factor, so by the pole. Okay? We see then that, as usual, this pole cancels out, and this limit is well defined. And dropping the I epsilon, there's an additional this factor, okay? 1 over 2pi, so this cancels out, this is a 1, and now we can calculate the limit, and dropping these I epsilon factors, we get 1 over 2ek. Okay, so this is the first part of this proof. The second part is now, we take the left-hand side of this equation and the right-hand side of this equation, and we integrate both sides by ek square. Okay? So we calculate the following integral, ek square d ek square. We have to make a prime, okay? You remember this issue? Prime square. Okay. And then we have the left-hand side. Two pi log minus k0 plus ek square minus I delta. And the right-hand side of the equation is just integral ek square d ek square prime 1 over 2 ek prime. Okay? So both integrals are more or less simple. So this, I mean, we have the derivative and the integral over it, so we have to evaluate the integrand at the boundaries of the integral, but this is nothing else than our initial condition, k0, 2pi, log, now ek square, not prime, here's a prime missing, prime. Okay, plus a constant, because at ek square equal to 0, we have the integral over log minus k square and this delta factor. So this is in general, I guess it is an infinite constant or something like that. Okay, so it is a constant, we throw it away, no problem. And this integral gives just ek. Okay, so up to this constant, which is not important for our purpose, we have proven this this relation. And so this is now QED. And hence, we can write this this zero-point energy as follows. Now we insert this expression for E. One half minus infinity k0 2pi log minus k naught square minus I delta. Okay, good. But what we see, I mean, we have the three momentum integration, the zero momentum integration, we can make a four momentum integration out of it. And this gives us this factor here, four momentum to the four, and then log. So then we know the explicit expression for the energy, which is nothing else than 3 momentum square plus m square. So we can combine the 3 momentum square, the 0 momentum square, to minus 4 momentum square, and then plus m square minus I delta. Okay, good. So now we have to evaluate this expression. Okay, this will be also quite complicated. So the first step is we make a Wick rotation. Okay, because we want to get rid of this Minkowski metric, because then we see that the resulting integral, sorry, you don't see that at the moment, that the resulting integral becomes a function that only depends on the square of the momentum. So it's a quadratic integral, and we can use the usual spherical coordinates. Okay, so this is the usual trick. So are there questions so far? I mean, it's technical, but I think everything is clear, right? Okay, next step, Wick rotation. So I write an arrow and write Wick over it, so you know what I mean. Wick rotation, and this k0 becomes I k4 in the notation of Professor Rischke, and then the 4 momentum goes to k bar, so this is the Euclidean momentum, that is composed of K4 and the usual free momentum. Okay, and then this integral is nothing else than one half d4 k bar log plus m square. So we drop this I epsilon factor because, there's one important. So this is in technical information. So the Wick rotation is only possible if we don't rotate over poles, okay? So you see one pole is here, one pole is there, and we rotate in this direction, right? So we don't rotate over poles, okay? So this is important. Good, and now we rewrite this, this integral in spherical coordinates. This means that this expression is nothing else than 1/2. Then we have the integration over the 3 surface and 0 to infinity. It's dk over 2 pi to the 4, k to the 3 log k square plus m square. Okay, so the surface of a 3 sphere is 2 pi square. Okay, and this gives us a total prefactor. So we have 1 over 16, right? 1 over 16 pi square integral dk k to the 3 log k square plus m square. So now we make a trick. Okay? We rewrite this, this log in a clever way. So the first step is to introduce a scale into the log. So log k square minus mu square plus m square plus mu square. Ah, here's a plus, there's a minus. Okay, so effectively I have done nothing. Okay, it's a zero. Good. But now I can pull this first factor, so I can factorize the argument of the log, and then I can use that the log of a product is the sum of two logs. Okay? So this is nothing else than log k square plus mu square plus log 1 minus mu square minus m square over k square plus mu square. Okay? So it's a dirty trick. And now we remember the series representation of a log of the form 1 minus argument. Okay? And then we can rewrite this last factor as a series. And so maybe I write the series representation here as a hint. So log 1 minus x is minus sum x to the power of n over n. Okay, so this is the series representation. And what we do is we use the series representation for the last log, and we write the first two terms of the series, we write them out, and then plus the series of the remaining infinite terms. Okay, I'll tell you why in a moment. So, do you need some time to copy it? No, okay. So this is now 1 over 16 pi square dk, k to the 3. So, and then, yeah, maybe I make a bracket. So, and then we have the first term, which is just log k square plus mu square. Okay, so this is this, the first term. And now we use the series representation. And the first term of the series is nothing else than minus mu square minus n square k square plus mu square. The second term is 1 over 2, and then the square of this guy. Square. And then the last one, minus sum n equals 3, 1 over n, mu square minus m square, k square plus mu square to the power of n. And then bracket closed. Okay? So, okay, now we see the first line of this expression, so the first three parts, so the log and these two terms, they are divergent. Okay? You can see it from simple power counting arguments that they cannot converge. Okay, so this guy, so I call it maybe A, B, and C. So A, B, C are UV divergent. And now we know, so this is some energy factor that has to be renormalized in the usual way, okay? But these two guys depend through capital M squared, they depend on phi. So this first guy here depends on phi square. So this is a term that needs this usual mass renormalization, okay? And this guy depends, okay, on m square and also on m to the 4, so it depends on phi square and phi to the 4, and it therefore needs also the mass renormalization and also of the coupling constant, okay? I write it down. Maybe I only use the first factor. So this one. Is proportional phi square mass renormalization. And the second factor is mu square minus m square square. This is proportional phi to the phi square and phi to the 4. So it is mass and coupling renormalization. Okay, so in the following, we will assume that we have done this renormalization perfectly, and we cured these infinities, and now we want to calculate the finite part, so which is the integral over this sum from n equals 3 to infinity. Okay, so this will be the next step. And this will also be not so simple. So are there some questions so far? Good. The next step. Assume that all counterterms are implemented. and the above UV divergences are cured. Okay, and then we calculate the renormalized part of this vacuum energy. So it is d3k 2 pi to the 3. And I write ren for renormalized, so we only consider the finite part now. And this finite part is 1 over 16 pi square integral dk k to the 3 sum one over n, and then this last part mu square minus m square divided by k square plus mu square to the power of n. Okay, so again we assume that this integral and the series are convergent, and then we can exchange them. And then we have the series n equals 3 to infinity mu square minus m square to the power of n divided by n. So this factor only depends on n but not on the four momentum. Okay, so we pull it out of the integral. Dk. And now I immediately rewrite this integral in the following way. So I write it as dkk, and the other factor of k square arising from this integral measure, I use it as follows. So first of all, I have a factor of mu to the power of 2 minus 2n, and then I have k square divided by mu square, okay, 1 plus k square divided by mu square to the power of n. So I just pulled this mu square factor out of this bracket, and I introduced a new variable in principle. Okay, so we want to use this new variable. Let's call it z. Z is nothing else than k square over mu square, and this means that mu square over 2 dz is k dk. Aha, so this is useful because now we can recast this integral into a simple integral that can be used that can be solved with standard methods. So this integral is nothing else than mu 4 minus 2n divided by 2 integral from 0 to infinity dz z 1 plus z to the power of n. Okay, and by using partial integration you can solve it. I only give you the final result. So this is nothing else than mu to the power of 4 minus 2n divided by 2 n minus. So then we have a product of 1 divided by n minus 1 times 1 over n minus 2. Okay, good. And so in the end we get the following result. Or for the moment, we get the following result. This is minus 1 over 16 pi square to the power of 2n minus m square divided by mu square to the power of n. And then 1 over n, maybe I get a problem, times mu 4 minus 2n 1 over n n minus 2. Okay, so this is our final result for the moment. So, yeah, I mean, you see it's pretty obvious what I did. I pulled this mu square factor out of this bracket. And now finally we are left with this sum. So this, you see that this independence on in the power of mu will vanish, because if you multiply this guy and that guy, only mu to the power of 4 is left, okay? So the independence is at this bracket here, and 1 over n, and at these two factors. So fortunately, it is possible to rewrite this 1 over n factors in a pretty simple way. So I just write it as a remark here. So 1 over n times 1 over n minus 1 times 1 over n minus 2 is nothing else than 1 over 2n plus 1 over 2 times n minus 2 minus 1 over n minus 1. Okay? So this will, in the first place, it doesn't look like that this is a simplification, but you will see in a moment that this is extremely useful. So you can check this identity. Yeah, I mean, it is simpler to start from this side and to calculate to the left-hand side. Okay? Good. Next step. The size of this blackboard is ridiculous. Time is left? Half an hour, okay. Good. Okay, next step. We have to solve the series. So to this end, we rewrite the series in a clever way. Of course. Minus mu to the 4. So, but first of all, I will summarize what we have at the moment. So you see, we just pulled this 1 over 2 factor out, okay? And then we rewrite the following expressions. Okay, so 1 over 2 n minus 3 1 over n 1 minus m square over mu square to the power of n plus 1 over 2 power of n, and then the last term, n minus 1 Okay, good. So if you look at this series, you might remember the series representation of the log. Okay. The only issue is that the series of the log starts at n equal to 1. Okay. So, but it's quite simple to rewrite this in a way to get the log. For example, the first term, so I call this A. So term A, maybe it's useful to, I think it is useful to pull this minus sign right in front of the series. And this is minus 1 times the series, okay? Good. So the first term, in order to obtain the usual log series, we pull this 1 over 2 factor in front, and then we have minus. Now I start at n equal to 1. Why not? But this is of course wrong. We have to correct this. And so we have to add the additional terms that we subtracted here. So the first term is 1 minus m square mu square plus 1 half 1 minus m square over mu square square. Okay? Good. And now this first term here, including the minus sign, is nothing else than log. And now we have to remember this is log 1 minus the argument. So 1 minus this, 1 minus 1, minus gives a plus. So this is just log m square over mu square. Okay? Perfect. Now term B. Again, including the minus sign, of course. And here also including the minus sign. This is term B. So in term B, we have a problem. Here, we have the term 1 over, the factor 1 over n. And this made everything simple. And here we have 1 over n minus 2. This seems to be problematic, but it is not, because we can simply change the summation index. Okay? We introduce a new summation index m, which is nothing else than n plus 2. Okay? So this is, so again I pull this 1 over 2 factor in front, and then we have minus sum m equals 1, 1 over m, 1 minus m square over mu square m, but here we have to be careful, we have n plus 2, okay? So in principle this bracket is not necessary. So, but now we can factor out the additional square of this bracket, and we obtain simply the same log times this bracket square. Okay, so this is 1 half 1 minus m square over mu square square log m square over mu square. And now finally we have term C. Okay, this will be. So maybe I give you here just the final result for term C. So term C is just 1 minus m square over mu square. I mean, you do the same trick. Now you introduce a new integration variable, a new summation index, which is just m, and m is n plus 1. And then you see that the series starts at 2, so you have to add and subtract the missing term for n equals 1, and then you can combine some part to the log, and you get a plus an additional term, okay? You will see it in the final result. So it is log m square over mu square plus 1 minus m square mu square. So this is the final result for C. And now we can combine everything and simplify everything. So this is now there is no trick. This is simple algebra. Okay. And in order to save some time, I just give you the final result. So algebra. Okay, and what we get in the end m to the 4 log m square over mu square minus, now we have some curious prefactors, 3 half minus 2 over 3 mu square squared. Okay, and so there's also, there's one trick. In order to get this binomial, I added and subtracted a factor of 1 over 6. Okay? And one of these 1 over 6 factors I included inside this expression, and the other 1 over 6 term, or the other 1 over 6 term is just dropped because it is a potential, and shifting a potential by a constant is not important. Okay? So it does not change anything. But it gives us the chance to generate this binomial. And yeah, this is the final result of Dolan and Jackheath. And so for the zero point energy, okay? Keep in mind that there's also a thermal part that we have to calculate in the end. But at this point, we want to stop for a moment. And we want to consider the effective potential at t equal to zero. Okay, I will do it on a new blackboard. Are there questions? Okay. Okay, consider effective potential at zero temperature. And what do we obtain? So it is V T equal to zero of phi. So clearly we get this the usual part from the usual potential, so this m square over 2 phi square plus lambda phi to the 4. And then we have to insert this expression. So you remember this is not temperature dependent. The temperature dependent part was the second part of this calculation, and we do it after this short interruption here. Okay. You can now, yeah, in principle, we have just to copy this expression. But I want to consider not only the t equals zero case, but also the small m square equal to zero case. Okay, so we delete this guy. Maybe I write it down. M square equal to zero. So this is the massless theory. Okay, the massless theory, and this massless theory gives us the following effective potential. Let me see. It is lambda 4. Okay, 1 plus 9 lambda 4 pi squared log 12 lambda phi squared plus 1 minus 27 lambda square over 8 pi square phi to the 4 96 pi square plus 3 lambda mu square 8 pi square phi square. So, okay, so this is now t equal to 0 and massless theory. So, and we ignore the last three terms. Okay, so basically these two terms here, they directly depend on mu, and in principle we could choose our renormalization scheme in a way that these terms are gone or in a complete different shape, whatever we like. The more important one is this term, okay? It also depends on mu, but we will consider these first two terms because it will turn out that even if we started with a massless theory, so massless would, if we think naively, massless would mean that our potential is just this parabola and symmetry breaking cannot happen, okay? And we are at t equals zero, so there's no terminal mass, okay? But, however, this first term is also able to generate spontaneous symmetry breaking, okay? And we will see it in a moment. So we just consider this part. And so we call it maybe, how do I call it? Small u, okay? We will only need it for 5 minutes, and this is just an intermediate consideration that is of some importance. Okay, we can now calculate the first derivative of u with respect to phi, and we can determine the minimum of this potential. Okay, so I give you only the final result. So this is nothing else than for lambda. You can calculate this on your own if you want, but I mean, this is nothing. This calculation step is nothing. You can learn something. 12 phi square. So there's a trick. There's an additional factor of the Euler constant, the square root of the Euler constant, because there's another term with the same prefactor, and I wrote this as a log to combine both terms. Okay, so this is nothing special and nothing important. And this times phi to the 3, and this has to be 0. And what we see is one possibility to get this whole expression to 0 is, of course, phi equal to 0. Okay, and the other one, you see that this square bracket can also vanish for a specific choice of phi square. And we can choose phi square now as follows. Phi square, 12 lambda square root of e exponential 4 pi square over 9 lambda. Okay, for this choice, the potential or the slope of the potential is also 0. We now have to check what the second derivative does if we insert this into the second derivative. So we want to see if it is a minimum or a maximum. So now, maybe I call this phi square bar in the notation of Professor Rischke. So this is, we expect that it is a minimum, and it did also turn out to be a minimum. So we calculate the second derivative now. The second derivative, I only give you the final result, is 3 phi square 4 lambda plus 9 lambda square over pi square log 12 lambda e to the power of 7 over 6 mu square phi square. Okay, and now you can insert this guy. So we consider this at phi square bar and this at phi square bar, and it will turn out, so I don't want to do it explicitly because I mean it's also simple algebra. It turns out that this guy is smaller than 0, and therefore this choice of phi square bar, corresponds to a minimum or minima. Okay? So this is interesting because now we have spontaneous symmetry breaking because we have more than one minimum. Okay, we have minima other than phi equal to 0, and we have two of them at least. Okay, I guess this potential will have many minima. Okay, and
Is this true?
No, not many minima. Just this one that we calculated, okay? But what we have shown with this small consideration is that the potential of this form, which is just generated from quantum fluctuations, okay? This is just purely generated from quantum fluctuations. And we can start with a massless theory, and quantum fluctuations generate a spontaneous symmetry breaking. Okay? And this is the important message. It is possible that we get spontaneous symmetry breaking due to vacuum fluctuations. Okay? And this mechanism, okay, maybe I write it down. Spontaneous symmetry breaking due to vacuum fluctuations. Fluctuations has a special name. It is called the Coleman-Weinberg mechanism. Okay, and we usually think that Steven Weinberg invented everything, but this is not Steven Weinberg, this is Eric Weinberg. Okay, this is the other Weinberg. So the reference is Sidney Coleman, Eric Weinberg, PRD7, and this is 1888 from 1973. Okay, so if you're interested in this Coleman-Weinberg mechanism, have a look at this paper. This is quite interesting. So, okay, so this is just an aside that Professor Rischke wants to show you. Now we come back to our initial problem. We want to calculate this effective potential. So we started with the vacuum energy, and this turned out to be this expression. Now we have to consider the temperature-dependent part. And after cleaning the blackboard, I present you the calculation of the temperature-dependent part, which is much shorter. The correct one? No. Yeah. Okay. Return to T dependent T dependent part of 1 PI effective potential. Okay, so this temperature-dependent part has the following shape. It is T times integral D3K log 1 minus E over T. Okay. Yeah, the idea is to introduce a new integration variable. We do it as follows. This new variable, let's call it x, is nothing else. So x is a vector. It's just k over t. Okay. And we will see that the resulting integrand is then spherically symmetric, but I just give you the first expression. So this d3x divided by 2 pi to the 3 log 1 minus e square root, and then we have x square plus mass capital M over t squared. Okay, and now what one usually does is a high temperature expansion. So we consider high temperature such that this factor is small. Okay, and in this approximation, this log can be expanded, and this log becomes high T expansion. Okay, so this log becomes 1 minus e to the minus x plus e to the minus x, 1 minus e to the minus x, 2 over x, m over t squared, plus order m to the 4, t to the 4. Okay. And now we can solve. So I already told you these integrals are only depend on the absolute of this vector, so on the magnitude. And now we can just solve these integrals. They are perfect formulas for these integrals. We don't have to solve them now. We just use the final formulas. So I rewrite it in the following way. So remember that we introduce spherical coordinates, and that this integration is only three-dimensional integration, so we don't integrate over the three sphere for the angular integration, but over the two sphere. Okay. X squared log 1 minus e to the minus x plus 1 half m over t square integral 0 infinity dx x divided by minus 1. Okay. And these integrals are perfectly known. So the first integral, maybe you know them from the statistical physics lecture. 45. And the last one is just pi square over 6. Okay. And then I want to quote the final result of the effective potential with these thermal contributions. There's also another contribution that we neglected so far completely. This is the contribution of these plasmon rings. You remember these diagrams, these rings with the 1pi self-energy insertions. I also just add the final result of these fluctuations. It will not be important for the final consideration and for the estimate of the critical temperature. But for completeness, I quote it. So finally, we obtain V of phi. So okay, there's the classical from the classical potential, lambda phi to the 4 minus p square over 9t. T to the 4. So this is obviously the contribution from the first integral plus m square t square over 24 minus. So this is now the contribution from the plasmon rings. These are the plasmon rings, plus, and now take the contribution from the vacuum fluctuations m to the 4 log mu square minus 3 over 2 m square minus 2 over 3 mu square square. Okay, plus, of course, there are also order m to the 4 t to the 4 corrections. Okay, so this is the high temperature contribution. So finally, for the final consideration, we neglect several of these terms. We neglect everything proportional to 3, to t m to the 3. So this is this plasmon ring contribution. And we neglect terms proportional to m to the 4. And then we calculate dv, d phi at the minimum is nothing else than this plus t square over 24 lambda, and this is phi square, phi times m square plus 4 lambda phi square plus lambda t square. And this can only be 0 for phi equal to 0, but this is not so interesting. We want to consider this part. This gives us a critical temperature, m square over lambda. Okay? Good. Okay, so this is the result from Dolan, Jakiv. Again, Dolan. Jakiv. So this is the first paper I quoted today. So that's basically everything. We have 1 o'clock. This is everything I wanted to show you. And I would say have a nice weekend and see you.